Hi, welcome to this new Q&A today with Emmanuel and Sarah. So, Emmanuel and Sarah, let's get started. I have never had you on the podcast actually yet. So, maybe you do a longer intro than usual. Maybe if you take like 5 minutes, can you give us a little intro, especially around your food path and how you educate your maybe your children around it?
Okay,
Yeah, go
I'm gonna
ahead.
go ahead.
Sure.
Okay, so we have been primarily fruit-based for I would say almost 7 years. This guy right here has been on the raw train for since I met him, so almost like
10.
10 years on and off, I would say, and then I guess seven for about on the fruit chain for about 7 years now. We got into fruit-based diet actually when we moved to Kauai, where we just had an abundance of fruit and vegetables and really was a place to thrive because the fruit was so fresh. This is from the land. We didn't have to go to grocery stores. We could go to the farmers. We could eat that fresh food daily. And also, he's a farmer himself. And so it was a great place to start growing food. So we've been on that journey for 7 years now. We have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old who love to be outside in nature, who love to eat fruits and vegetables and grow them and pick them themselves as well. And we really feel that living close to nature not only helps adults thrive, but also children as well. Do you want to add anything?
Was that good?
Yeah,
Okay.
that was great. And I'll open up for questions now. Just people, you can raise your hand in the Zoom room and we can take it in that order. Or Anthony, as I know you don't have a strong connection, you can also leave them in the chat. And just before I open it for other people for questions, I'd love to understand when you say fruitarian, can you be a little bit more precise about what your diet looks like and has been like?
Yeah, for us, I typically don't call it fruitarian. I call it fruit-based. I think it's more accurate because we eat, and I don't think it's either vegan because sometimes we eat honey as well. Okay. And some people consider, that not being vegan. But I'll say primarily we eat fruit. Okay. Sometimes, of course, salads, vegetables, and nuts and seeds.
Sprouts.
And sprouts and things like that. So I'll say that it's not a technical fruitarian. I'll say it's more like a fruit-based. Okay.
Like 95% fruit. Yeah.
Zorko, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Alex. Hi, Emmanuel. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm interested. What was the main reason that you take this decision and transit to a fruitarian-based diet?
All right. I'll tell you my story, and I think telling the story is easier. I'm from Argentina, and I grew up eating red meat twice a day, every day. Okay, we have in Argentina more cows than people. And so, to have chicken or fish was a delicacy or out of the norm. Okay. And coming from a Italian heritage, there was a lot of pasta and that kind of stuff. So when I was in my, I'll say, late 20s, okay, I realized that I was not a very nice person to be around. And I wanted to be better for not for myself, but for the people around me. Okay. And that's when I started, I'll say, my spiritual journey. And I started going to a lot of sweat lodges, a lot of 10-day silent Buddhist retreats. I went to all these different spiritual journeys to attend to my, I'll say, emotional baggage. And the transition was not even planned. Was not even an effort, was not even educated. I grew up without even knowing there was something called veganism or something called fruit-based raw food and all that stuff. That was, I learned that, on my early 30s. I had never heard about that. Okay. So it was, you know, one day I'm not stressed about X, Y, and Z in my life anymore. And things start falling off naturally without, you know, without having the need. So all of a sudden I cut alcohol all of a sudden, but we're not thinking I had to cut alcohol. I'm thinking I don't feel like it. And then coffee, and then this, and then that. And one day I realized I haven't eaten meat in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And some people tell me, oh, so you're vegetarian. I'm like, I don't know what I am. And I'm just eating what I want. Okay. So for me, it's a little bit of like as within, so without. And that's mm-hmm. how my journey started. So as my internal changed, my self-destructive behaviors changed. And I didn't realize how much emotional eating I was mm-hmm. doing until a lot later. So my education in food came after I was already pretty much in a vegan raw diet out of my internal process, I will say. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met her.
Yeah, when I met him, he was just like, I swear, I thought he was meditating like all day long, and he was just glowing and always had this smile on his face. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I've been raw for a year. And I'm like, wow, your teeth are white. You know, and it was really inspiring for me too, because when we met, you know, I was vegan already. And it wasn't till about a year and a half later when I actually went, when I went fruit-based myself, and I decided to do it actually more so health reasons, because for me, I just had some issues going on after I had my first child. And about a year later, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I have to be good for my daughter, for my husband, for myself. Like, I'm not functioning right now properly. And that's when I decided to do a 7-day grapefruit juice fast. And then I went all raw, and we were high fat, actually raw, for about 6 months until we moved to Kauai, when we really started taking in all the fruit. So that was kind of my journey as well.
Nice, I hope that answers. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good answer. Do you think that this diet is the optimal diet for you and for your children, for your family?
That is a tricky question. Okay. And this is what I'll say. If I was living in a environment as, you know, let's say 100 years ago or 200 years ago was, where the environment was clean and we had plenty of nutritious food being grown on unmolested soil, I will say yes. Now, I think nowadays the food is extremely devoid of nutrients in so many ways that if we are eating, let's say somebody that lives just in the United States, in the main, in the continental area, you're just eating, you know, bananas from Peru or from Ecuador and tomatoes from Mexico and whatever. And those industrial agriculture doesn't allow the plants to pick up the necessity of the nutritional, you know, needs of that plant itself. And that's why they get sick. And that transfers to us. So I will say, physiologically speaking, we are very good adapted for that diet if the conditions are given. Now, modern days, those conditions are rare to find. Okay. Mm-hmm. So physiologically speaking, it's like tigers need to eat gazelles, man. I'm sorry. See what I mean? That is not a question about, you know, our what we're meant to eat is the conditions given. You see, any animal that you put in a zoo and they start, you change their diet, they get sick, they get depressed, they get anxious, they fight with each other, kill each other, they get aggressive, etc. Right? Their behavior change. So we humans, that we have put ourselves in captivity. And we have our, you know, change our own diet. Mm-hmm. So that's a different situation. Yeah. But there's not a lot of places in the world that you can find that nowadays available.
And have solely, you know, I would say solely fruit. You know, sometimes you go into the middle of America and you can't find anything organic at all, or they don't even have fruit available. So then somebody in like negative, you know, 10 degrees eating just frozen fruit could be really difficult and hard.
I will not even suggest that.
Yeah.
So it's complicated. So if you talk from a physiological perspective, I think it is, we are built for that, but can we do it nowadays? Is a challenge.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're here. You know, that's one of Manuel's biggest things is actually, he does syntropic agroforestry. So actually changing the soil and getting the food to be where it should be. I mean, what did you say? You think it's at like a 20% right now where it could be?
Not even. It's not what it could be. I think it's below acceptable levels.
Yeah.
You know, even the organic food that we eat nowadays, if you study a little bit of agriculture and you understand what's happening and how the plants cannot pick up nutrients, industrial agriculture, even organic, is below acceptable levels, just flat out. And that is not just for fruits and vegetables. We're growing everything like that. So yeah. People say, oh, but I'm going to eat, you know, cooked food. Okay, fantastic. But that cooked food is grown in the same way.
Right.
That rice, that wheat, that millet, that quinoa, how you think that is being ground? So also that is devoid of what it should have as well.
So that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, all across the board, the food is not where it should be. But yeah, again, that's another.
But typically speaking, if you tell me, physiologically speaking, every race of every animal has to eat its own food.
Yeah.
And we start, look at a dog, you know, you put him in a, you know, I met people that were raising wild or semi-wild wolves in the mountains, and they would just take them hunting. They will not feed them. And then you put them next to like a pet that is eating, you know, soy dog food from China. Okay, so it's complicated.
But yes, we would thrive. Imagine if everyone had fruit trees just around.
You know, we go through phases where we have that availability and we feel physically, mentally, and emotionally and spiritually different.
Yes, 100%.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes.
I hope that answers the question. It was long.
Yeah, I'd love to ask next for Anthony, actually, because he asked in the chat because his connection is not so good. Did family members and friends try to stop you from following this diet, especially raising your children on it? And how do you handle people who are opposed to this lifestyle?
Okay.
One
second. I'll tell this much. At the beginning, nobody really tried to stop me. And the reason was because they started seeing me and my transformation and how I became healthier. So it was the opposite. They were asking me, hey, how come, you know, you're, you know, not getting wrinkled, not getting all white out, you know? You know, I'm in my mid 40s right now, you know, and I work 8 hours a day out in the field. So people are like, and I help a lot of people with different physical conditions in all levels. So people will at the beginning find it kind of weird or whatever, right? But it turned out the opposite, because when you walk your talk, and people see the change within you, then they want it. They're like, hey, what is that you got? You see what I mean? So you become the own example of what's happening. So at that point, people, instead of questioning it, they would ask for advice on their health condition. Now, can they follow it themselves? They have a hard time. And that's another conversation of why then they might have a hard time following it themselves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times is an emotional attachment. They're having a hard time with certain things in their lives. Sometimes it's just flat out, you know, parasites and some pathogens that they're not allowing them to just, their cravings are too strong. And we talk a lot extensively about that. And so, not necessarily. People question, at the beginning, it was not about questioning. People feel, I don't say judged, okay, but they feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
You see, like you're eating like an extremely good, healthy meal, and they are eating junk food, and they feel like crap.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. So there is a tendency for people either to question you or to attack you, not because they don't know that it's better, but because it makes them feel like crap themselves.
Yeah.
You see, they feel uncomfortable within their own skin by doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what we found out to be true.
Yeah. Well, okay. And people would also, you know, like I would notice the uncomfortability where all of a sudden they'd be like, well, I don't eat like this all the time. Yeah. I'm just, you know, I'm just.
Yeah. Some excuses, you know.
They'll just have excuses. And I'm like, I'm not judging you. You can eat however you want to eat. Like for me, I am so solid on my, I don't want to say my diet, but my lifestyle of this fruit lifestyle that like no one can push me out. Anybody can say anything about it. And I'm like, whatever, you know, but they definitely, people will have issues of their own issues coming up with just the comfortability of actually being around us and then feeling like they can't do it or for whatever.
Yeah. And one thing that I did find is that people trying to create controversial conversations about it.
Yeah.
And we are not the kind of people that like to advocate this. We don't go around telling people what they should do. We don't tell people, hey, eat like this because it's better. We just simply do our thing. So we're in our own corner, eating our own meal, even if it's at a party, a gathering, or wherever that is. And people notice it.
Yeah.
And the ones that are interested in it will come and say, hey, nice. Or sometimes, you know, we're pushing our shopping cart at the store and people are like, what are you doing with all those bananas? You know, and I'm like, well, you know what, they're gonna be gone by tomorrow. And they're like, really?
Yeah. So, but then 9 times out of 10, those people will be like, wait, can I get your email? Do you guys have a website? Like, I've always been interested in this, but I have no idea where to start. And so that's always a really good conversation starter, is actually at the grocery store, or you know, when they see Francis, my 3-year-old, pushing these like parts of papayas and bananas out of this produce place, and they're like, what is he doing? I'm like, he's pushing our fruit.
Yeah. And there's some people that will start throwing you know things like physiological questions.
Oh, where do you get your protein?
Where do you get your protein? Stuff like that, right? And so I start having, you know, I mean, I have 10 years background on studying this thing because, you know, I've been doing it for that long. So I have had extensive conversations with, I even helped, you know, nutritionists, PhD nutritionists with their own cancer problems.
And nurses and doctors. And
so,
yeah.
I don't have a problem having a conversation on that level. So when people see that you're educated, that you're not pushing an agenda on them, that you don't feel better than them because we're under God, we're all, you know, the same and equal, and nobody's better than each other, nobody's judging nobody, and you have the physiological understanding for one side, all that dissolves any sort of friction. Okay. So that's our experience.
Does it go the same with the children?
Exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
You know, and because, you know, people start asking me questions about it, I'm like, okay, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, you know, I tell them, well, let me ask you something. When was the last time that your kid had a flu or a cold or had a, you know, a runny nose? And they're like, well, you know.
Last week.
Once a month at least. Yeah. And I say, well, my children never had any of them, ever. Okay, why is that? Okay, I can explain. You know, I can explain, you know, mucus building. I can explain how congestion happens. I can explain what happens when you take antibiotics. I can tell everything that happens to every part of the organ of what happens with each food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, physiologically speaking. And you know, at that point, of course, you know, they see my children very vibrant, very happy, you know, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Now, are we the kind of people that say food is bad for you? No. And that's when I say primarily fruit-based, is because if I go traveling and I don't have any other food, you know, food available, I might just eat some cooked vegan food, no problem. You see, I cannot, I'm not in a stage of my life that I can fast in water for a month and be functional. Okay. Yeah. We just spent four months on the mainland and I had to, you know, eat what I could within the understandings that we have, you know, doing the best we can and, you know, in a good way. And that's it. You know, we understand that we're in 2023, you know, and we have a life and we have to do what we can.
Yeah. But you can tell, you know, with children too, just even the, you know, when they're eating so much fruit and just that aliveness, they have so much energy. And what I realized is that, you know, I remember even having a friend say, you know, like, well, just give them something to numb them down, numb them down. And I was like,
because they're too hyper.
Why would I want to numb my children down?
Like, I mean, they consider hyper. My children, they just like to play.
Yeah, they just like to play. They, like I said, they have a lot of energy. And I think that's the hardest part, is
they're
actually
having a sugar rush. They're just like that all day long. Oh, like they just have a lot of energy.
They just have a lot of energy. And I think that, you know, that is a really good topic to talk about, because, you know, to be able to withstand and be okay with your kids' vibrant, natural energy and not want to push it away or distract it with something else, I think is really, is really something important. Like, 'cause you see a lot of parents that will just go, oh, we'll just take these, you know, a Snickers or a ding dong, whatever.
Give them some rice so they can just get lobotomized for a
just
second.
Just so they can like fall asleep. Like, give them something so they can fall asleep, because the parent needs to have their own space or they need their own time. And so it's like, it's really like, how can we help the parents, you know, to be able to do this? You know, it starts with them to be able to do this type of lifestyle and to gain more energy themselves, to be accepting of that energy, you know, with their children. I think this is important to say. One of the things, you know, when we would go to like parties and stuff, or we'll go to the beaches, we'll bring always like a bunch of fruit, and always the kids come and eat the fruit first. You know, they're not going to go to the burgers. They're not going to go to the French fries. They come, they're like, oh my gosh, there's fruit. Like, I'll bring acai bowls. There's like,
we run out every single birthday party that we go to. All the kids below 5 years old, they run to us. Like if it was like bears to the honey.
Yeah.
And until they don't eat all our food, all the mangoes, all the blueberries, until all that is gone, they don't look at anything else in the party.
Yeah.
And when that is done, then they go and eat their, you know, their tacos or whatever that is.
Yeah.
And you can do that test, you know, go to any birthday party when there's children below five. So, you know, they have not been already super, I'll say conditioned. And especially 3 years old, like something like that, just put a bunch of fruit in something else and go see where they orbit to.
Yeah.
Okay. And they'll all go to the fruit. There's just no question. But when she was talking about the, so that's a great experiment, you know, you can do in a birthday party. But about, you know, just taking fruit to children and see what they do naturally. You see from their own.
Yes.
You don't have to push it. You just put it there and observe, you know, and see what happens.
And also too.
But I just wanted to finish something because you brought something really cool about the parents.
Cool.
And one of the things that we notice is that the parents don't play with their children anymore. And so what they're complaining about children being actually having too much energy is the children just want their attention. They just want to play. And parents nowadays don't want to do that. They just want to, you know, kind of do what we're doing now, you know, putting them on the TV and keep it quiet, right? So this for us is our last resort. We don't do this. We just do this because we both need to be here for like, you know, a little bit of time, and that's it. And then the TV is off. Okay. But we spend a lot of time playing with them.
Yeah.
Playtime with our children is not just crucial, but it's a big part of the day. Sometimes it's not just at night after I come from work, but it sometimes happens in the morning before I go, and we play for half an hour to an hour. And then, or sometimes, you know, if I have to come home during lunchtime or whatever, there's playtime, and definitely there's playtime at night. So when parents don't have that energy to keep up with the children, that's another whole other conversation, to have.
Yeah. And they just play with me all day long.
So that's a lot of playtime, a lot of running, a lot of tickling, a lot of, okay. Yeah. So anyhow, so playtime with the parents, I think it's something big.
Well, and also too, I want to share this because I think it's important as well. There's a lot of, I mean, as you guys know, when you're raw, you know, your emotions are very raw. You're actually feeling things, you're not numbing them. And I think that's important too with the children, is like they're, you know, when they're eating a lot of fruit, their emotions are raw and real. And so you have to be okay with having, you know, opinionated children and children that are going to be very real with their emotions, whether it's, I'm going to yell at you or I'm going to cry right now. And to be able to...
Very expressive.
To be able to be accepting and to hold space for that too, I think is really, is really important to remember as well. So.
Yeah, that's a long topic.
Yeah, that's a very long topic. We can talk about...
Children's emotions is a very long topic. We can do a whole conversation about that one day if you guys want to.
Hey guys.
Hi.
Hi. So I met Emmanuel and Sarah in Uluwatu, Bali about 3 years ago, I think. And they introduced me to fruit-based eating. And one of the things I did notice is your children, they had a lot of energy, but it wasn't erratic. It was calm energy. So there was also another girl being raised on the same complex as where we lived. And her name was Gretchen. And she was Balinese. And there, she was the same age as Issa. And that's your daughter, of course. And you could see the difference. So one ate cookies and bread, and the other ate primarily fruit. And that was your child, obviously. And Gretchen would scream and cry and kick and all this stuff, while Issa would even just kind of watch that. Because I was hanging out with Issa a lot. Really.
Yeah.
And she would just kind of like, probably thinking, what the hell is going on with that girl? So... there's this great, incredible energy with your kids that I got to experience, because I didn't raise my kids on fruit. I have three kids, and because I didn't know about it. I did know about raw back then, and I was raw for 2 years back then. But after you left, I met a doctor who's been a fruitarian for 50 years, and he taught me all this stuff as well. So I immediately became mostly fruit. When Lotus, my partner Lotus, when she tells everybody I'm a fruitarian, I'm like, I am not a fruitarian. I just eat a lot of fruit. And so what has happened to me is a complete change. I thought I was eating healthy. I was a vegan for 23 years and I just thought I was eating healthy, but I didn't always feel that way. And since I've been doing this fruit diet where I'm eating about 90% fruit a day, I'm feeling fantastic. There's one thing that keeps hitting me. Like when I went back to the United States, I was there for several months. This is about a year ago. I felt fantastic and I ate mostly fruit. But when I come back to Bali, I get hit with something. It seems like every 3 months, and it's like a parasite, and it bugs the crap out of me because I feel amazing. And then for about a week to 2 weeks, I feel horrible. And so I change stuff around, and I go more on a kind of water fast type of thing, juice fast type of thing. And it's fruit juices. Do you have any recommendations, or is it just going to always be like that here in Bali? I mean, maybe it's just the thing, or maybe I'm doing something correctly.
Well, this is what we know. I'll just tell what we tell everybody to do. Okay. And first thing is, you know, hygiene, especially in the tropical, subtropical climates, is crucial. Okay. And I'm not saying that you're a dirty person. What I'm saying is handling the products is complicated. Okay. And so we tell people, wash all the fruit before even cutting the fruit. Okay. I wash my bananas. They come from the store and I wash them. I wash my fruit before cutting it, before opening it, before handling it. Okay. Because parasite eggs get stuck in there. Okay. People, most parasites don't come from the fruit itself. The fruit inside doesn't have parasites. It comes from the people, lack of hygiene. They're handling the fruit and the produce. Okay. So that's one part of it. The other part is I've been trying to convince people that it's almost impossible, that there's no need to use chicken or cow or horse manure on growing vegetables. And that's, you know, when people say, oh, I got E. coli or I got salmonella, they're not things that are, you know, inherent to the vegetable kingdom. They come from animal sources, okay? So when people and farmers have or they're handling animals and then they go handle vegetables, that's a problem. So what I tell people is like, I go and you can get all your vegetables, all your salad, everything. Don't you ever eat out, because there's no one single restaurant that handles food properly. And I worked in the best restaurants in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills, in Hollywood, and you will drop dead if I show you the kitchen. Okay.
Yeah, but that's so hard in Bali because the and food Bali's restaurants, even worse. It's so good and you want to go and eat there. You want to go to
a salad, for example, you want to eat a salad out, right? And the likeliness of you getting a parasite is very high. Okay. So I will never eat raw food out. So you grab, you know, you go to your sink in your kitchen and then you just fill it up with water. You put some white vinegar on it, and then you soak them and you submerge them for 20 minutes, and that will kill all parasite eggs, and then you're more likely to be better. Okay, first I rinse them off and then I submerge them. Okay. And that's how you prevent that kind of stuff. But if you eat salads out on a raw food diet because you just want to be part of a social thing, forget about it. And if you're going to the farmer's market in Bali, you know, and you're getting your fruit and you're not washing your dragon fruit or your mango before cutting it open and eating it, you're going to be eating all the stuff that was in the hands of the person that handled it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. They were petting their goats and their dogs and whatever, scratching themselves, yada, yada. And that's in the skin of the fruit.
Yeah.
So... doesn't have to, but it's about taking hygiene to that level. Okay.
Makes sense. Yeah.
It's difficult. Yeah,
it is difficult.
Because we want to go out, you know, we want to be social and all that stuff, you know, and it's complicated. And it takes an extra step, yeah. You know, but I say the steps that you're not taking by cooking and by doing so many dishes and all that stuff, taking them by just, you know, being more thorough with your washing.
Yeah, because I wash them, but not like I should. Don't do the vinegar thing. And I kind of just learned that now. So I'll start doing that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had a friend who actually took, this is really interesting. She used to, when she would go out to eat, she would just order a plain salad and she would ask for her vegetables on the side. And she had a little spray bottle of vinegar in her purse. And she would spray, she's like, oh, I bring my own dressing. And she would spray her vegetables.
That's funny.
Sorry, I just thought it was hilarious. Not that you're gonna do that in Bali.
But there are other things that I will do, for example, just periodically. I will eat noni.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
You guys have noni there, right?
They should, yeah.
Yeah.
So and that's what I mentioned, because it's a typical from there. But noni will help your levels of bacteria and all that stuff to stay low. So eat, you know, noni on the daily, that will help quite a bit. And also keep your fat in check.
your levels of fat.
If you eat too much fat, the likeliness, and when you mix that with fruit, the likeliness of getting a bug like that is much higher than if you keep it low on the fat.
Okay? Yeah, and also if you're eating, like, let's say you eat 95% fruit and then you have fat and then you add a bunch of starch at night, you're just like, they've got a festival of...
Yeah, if you ate, let's say, fruit all day, and then you want to eat like a cooked meal and you eat some tofu with a salad and tofu tacos with some
curry and
stuff like that, boom, it's going to explode in your belly.
Yeah.
And you're going to be in bed. You're going to be in bed burned.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially tofu and tempeh, especially.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
What were you going to ask, Brandon? I saw you were going to say something else and you interrupted you.
Yeah, what was it? Well, another question came up. I was going to ask something else, but another question just came up. I was watching, so I've been moving for 3 days, so I'm really tired, and I couldn't sleep, even though I was dead tired. And so I turned on a Netflix thing called Blue Zones, and they did one on Costa Rica. And the Costa Rican diet, not the Costa Rican, the certain area in Costa Rica, they're very poor there, but they eat whole foods, and it comes, you know, almost strictly from the soil. They take it from the soil and eat it. They eat very rarely. They eat meat. But one thing that they swear by, and I want to know what your thoughts on this is what they call the perfect protein, the three sisters: squash, corn, and black bean. Mm-hmm. And these centurions who are still farming at 105 years old, move like they're like 50, still run, and they look fantastic. They look like they're 105, but they look like they're like 70. So what is your thoughts on what they call the perfect protein?
Okay. Before I get to that, I'll just share something else, okay? About 100 to 150 years ago, that type of lifespan was not uncommon. Even though people talk about that average person dying, like, you know, not passing like 45 or so, that is not so accurate. Okay, life expectancy, you have to remember that it takes in account from everybody that was born and how many died. So there was a lot more children dying before, and people die from silly infections all the time. Okay. But in my own family, okay, both mom and dad side, I have centennials.
Oh, me too.
Okay.
102.
And I think the most remarkable one was my mom's Spanish grandpa. He was from Asturias. And he died in 97 in an accident. It was like a silly death that he had. But he was fully functional. He didn't wear glasses, didn't wear a cane, didn't wear a hearing device, whatever. Fully functional. Bright, sharp, boom. 97, okay? Not even reading glasses. Barely ate meat, okay? And... people back then, they were, if you got to, put yourself, like, you know, 200 years ago, it was very complicated to eat meat. You see, killing the animal, you know.
Freezing it.
How are you going to freeze it? I don't know if an Eskimo will freeze it, right?
Yeah, you put it underground.
You know, but, you know, taking the skin, you know, the bone and whatever, the cooking, it was a tremendous work. So what they did, they ate a lot of cured meat, a lot of salamis and cured meats like that. So that was raw meat in a way. Like prosciutto, stuff like that. Okay, so that was a lot more available than you know, making a big barbecue. So people were not eating, you know, meat, you know, twice a day, every day. Okay, that was not part of the 14 meal a week thing. So, and everybody had their own, you know, backyard, you know,
garden,
orchard, whatever. Okay. So they ate in a way much closer in diet than we do. You see, they grew a lot. They grew pretty much everything they ate, and they ate almost no meat, just a little bit of cured meat here and there. Okay. Yeah, they ate some bread and stuff like that. Okay. I think the perfect protein, you know, in a way, in my opinion, comes from sprouts and from algae. They don't come that when you're getting protein from legumes, you're getting proteins from, you know, from the three that you mentioned, which is the corn and the bean and the squash. Really, the bean is the one that it has protein in it. You know, the corn not necessarily has it, you know, in an amount that you can even compare to a fruit, to an orange. And same with the squash, it's very low. Okay. But the beans, so there's a, some people consider the legumes to be great sources of protein, and some people say they create havoc in your belly. Okay, so there are different schools. Even within Ayurvedic people or Chinese medicines, they have different opinions. Okay, I don't think that is from my personal experience, for all the people that helped, is not related to the actual bean or lentil or legume itself. Is about the precondition and the amount of candida, the amount of parasites they have in their own gut when they're eating it. Also, if people are sprouting them prior or not, it was common practice to sprout the legumes and the beans, you know, back in the day. Nowadays it's not. That creates more problems.
Mm-hmm.
So
isn't there more protein available actually if you're just eating, you know, the sprout legume, you know, like
physiologically speaking, a legume changes its composition. Okay, it uses part of those carbs to create more protein to grow the actual plant. Okay, so if you look at a seed or a legume in the process of from being dry to being a full plant, it will change, and eventually there'll be no more carbs and you'll be just the plant.
Yeah.
Right. So the carbs are there just to, in the same, then the fruit has the flesh is to feed that seed, which that's what a legume is, to allow it to give it the impulse to become a plant, okay? And that's why it changes. In my opinion, and this is unfortunate because it's very difficult nowadays to get good quality algae, but in my opinion, the algae, if we could get them clean from areas that are not, they don't have polluted water, to me that is the optimal protein. Okay, we don't need a lot of protein, especially when the body's developed. It's just for maintaining the body, anyways. And our cells, when they die, we reabsorb them anyway. Okay, so unless we're in a super big growth spurt, I think it's I think there's neither the beans, neither those. I think the sprouts are probably the best, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, guys, and let's take one more question.
Okay.
What does your look like? What do you eat in a day? What fruits? What time?
Well, that depends a bit on availability, but
time of the year. Yeah.
In time of the year. So we eat what is in season, right? But this is what I try to do. Okay, I try to eat high water content fruit for breakfast. Medium water content.
You mean like this?
No.
It's not coming out.
It's a watermelon.
Yes.
I'll say that a watermelon, for example, Yeah, or a dragon fruit, or grapes, or citrus, papayas. Papayas. Okay, all those are like, I'll say, anything that is above, you know, let's say 80 to 85% water, I'll say there is a good breakfast. One, I'll say there's something that is medium water content, like a mango, you know, or a peach, which is somewhere between 80 to 85. I'll say it's a good for lunchtime. And then something that is a little more hearty or low water content, like a banana, like a sapote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All that stuff is to be eaten at night. And that's how we eat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll have some salad in there with some sprouts and seeds.
Primarily and salad we eat it at lunch. We don't, I don't eat salad at night.
Yeah.
And my greens go during the day.
Yeah.
Okay. And we eat with the sun. So we don't eat after nighttime.
Unless I'm pregnant. Now, when I was pregnant, my diet, let me tell you, I would have like 64 ounces of grapefruit juice with greens first thing.
But
it
was not juice, was it blended?
Sorry, blended. I would blend it.
She would chew it.
And then I would have 4 pounds of grapes, right? By lunch. By lunch, I already had like 2,200 calories. And then I would have like 10 bananas and then some dates, because the dates are amazing for the cervix and the uterus. And then you would go into nighttime and I would have like these massive salads with like mac nuts and avocados and sprouts and tomatoes and all the vegetables.
It was different. Yeah.
Yeah, it was different. But I mean, it was, that's one thing is people say, how can you do it, you know, even pregnant? And I had I had a high raw fruit pregnancy, primarily fruit, you know, and I had zero symptoms of pregnancy.
No nausea,
no emotional ups and downs, no swelling of the feet. I had a 10-minute pain-free, push-free birth. Okay. That day I was packing boxes of fruit from the farmer's markets.
It was four contractions.
Four contractions, and he came out.
Boom,
and
boom, boom, boom.
It went out, came back in. And my, I remember my midwife, she didn't even make it. I ended up having a free birth. And
I was there.
Yeah, he was there. He catched the baby, right? While he's like eating a banana. I'm just kidding. But I remember afterwards, I was like, I need to get up and eat some like mulberries and some bananas. And she's like, just rest. I'm like, I don't need to rest. Like, I was not tired. It was just like this very natural thing that happened.
She was walking around right after giving birth, like nothing had happened.
Yeah.
She was going to the bathroom back and forth. She didn't need to lay down. And it was in the middle of the night. Okay.
Yeah, it was like 1:30.
And
yeah.
Nobody was sleepy. Mm-hmm. Like we were,
and, you know,
you know, that idea of the woman being in a hospital and, you know, like having to rest for weeks afterwards and all that stuff. But also she prepared
For 2 years for him. Like I,
you know,
ate fruit, detoxed my whole body, all my organs to make sure that I could have, you know, an easier time with my pregnancy as well as the birth. And you could see it, like I had a very normal, healthy weight baby who looked so, his skin, he just had so much circulation. He looked so good. And, you know,
He looked like a strawberry
and he was strong. I mean, his legs and his arms, he would kick. He was really, really, really strong. And he loves fruit, loves, especially durian.
Yeah, that's one of the things that the kids pick up a lot on the diet that the mother has during the pregnancy. So they end up craving a lot of that stuff.
That's their first craving.
But that is just it's something that's subconscious, and that is another conversation that we can have another.
Yeah.
And do you still have sometimes a cheat day or something like no?
What's a cheat day consist of?
Maybe a candy for children. Maybe a veggie burger. I don't know.
I don't have a feel for it.
For candy? I'll be very honest. My child has never had candy.
Yeah, they don't know what candy is.
They don't know what it is. Their candy is like seaweeds, like little seaweed snacks.
Yeah, but for us, I think that our cheat comes from lack of availability. Yeah. You see, it's not because there's a wanting. Say, oh, I want or I miss something. It's about, oh man, you know, X, Y, and Z is not available right now. What are we gonna do? You know, so. It turns to be a compromise and not a cheat, you know. I mean, that doesn't, and again, it's part of the part of it is the emotional process, and that, you know, you end up not missing anything, but also the physiological process of the pathogens and the toxins not being there, passing through and asking again for that.
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't have like pictures of like grilled cheeses like flying through my brain going, come eat me. You know, for me, I'm extremely, I want to say like strict. He would say I'm strict. I'm pretty, you know, I love my fruit and my veggies and salads. And
it's more like a compromise.
Yeah.
And it's more of like the availability, really.
Yeah.
What about salt? Do you use salt?
Salt goes really with cooked food, you know. Salt is something that, you know, I mean, just put yourself in the position, right? You make a meal and you're cooking, you just made a soup, okay, and you cooked it. It doesn't taste like anything, right? But you don't need to add salt to any fruit
or in a salad
either. You don't add salt to a salad. Of course, you know, if you're eating seaweeds, if you're eating algaes, and if you're eating celery, for example, you know, you're getting a lot of your sodium and other minerals in higher quantity. Also, I consider the need of salt a cue from our palate then saying, hey, there's something missing there. You see? And it's the same story if you eat like a crappy tomato or if you eat a really good tomato, you can tell the difference, right? And then so the mineral content, and sorry, I'm going back to that, but the mineral content in food is what ends up telling us that we need more minerals. And that's why we end up craving that. And there's another, and there's more to it, okay? Kidney function is huge. So it plays huge with the level of general acidosis on the lymphatic system. If the person has sand or, you know, stones in their kidneys and yada yada. So it can be a long conversation, but primarily from the normal, I'll say just, you know, from the palate, right? It has to do with our taste buds telling us that the food doesn't have enough minerals in it.
Mm-hmm. Yay. Well,
thank you so much, Emmanuel and Sarah. And we're very happy to do another one another time. That's been amazing and really inspirational, I'm sure, for everyone. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you so
great to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Are you guys all fruit-based, would you say, or high raw that are here today?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
I am newbie. I am newbie, only a few months.
Okay, where do you live?
I live in Slovenia, Europe.
Okay, wow, nice.
That's a whole different ballgame there.
Yes.
That's great. Awesome. Well, but you get to enjoy all the temperate climate fruits, and that is great.
Nowadays, the permacin is just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Okay. Awesome. That's great.
And are you in Bali too?
Not yet.
No.
Sorry.
No, sorry.
But I'm looking forward to visit Bali.
No, I was talking about.
You're talking about Alex.
If he's in Bali.
No, I'm in Bali. We heard from everybody that the best fruit is in Vietnam.
Yeah. I haven't been there yet.
But we heard people have been in Thailand and in other places. They said Vietnam is a place to go. So it's something that we have in mind.
Yeah, Bali's good fruit, though. We loved the dragon fruit. Oh, my gosh. So amazing. Are you down in Ulu or are you up in Ubud?
I'm in Ubud.
Ah, nice.
Awesome.
Yay.
That's great.
Yeah, awesome. It's awesome. And next step is definitely to have my own garden. So right now I get organic from a trusted farmer, but still not the same. So yeah, next step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for your time. And we can chat more after. But
of course.
For now, absolutely. Thank you. And I'll post on YouTube. So thank you also to everyone. Sounds great. After, and do you want to share like Emmanuel and Sarah maybe a little bit what you're doing also, like if you're helping people?
We've been helping people for a long time. We have basically about, I'll say, 6 courses. 3 of them are related to the food aspect, and the other 3 are related to the emotional aspect, and they are progressional in nature. So we start everybody on a regular cooked food diet, and then we have one that is a transition, and then the other one is how to sustain a raw food diet on the different times of the year. And of course, before that, it was a lot related to doing dedicated specific healing work that people needed, so using food as medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the, since I went raw, I really, really dedicated a lot of my time, not just to understand the physiology, but to study agroforestry. And so I do a lot of agroforestry. I plant, I'll say, fruit gardens for people. Okay. In a way that they will sustain themselves and thrive and create ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So people can sustain this diet in a good way.
Yeah.
And the land mass that is needed compared for a person that is a fruit-based diet, comparison to a person that eats meat, is incredibly less. You can feed a family of 4 in like a quarter of an acre, and to grow 1 cow, you need 4 acres.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah, man. I'm so just on closing thoughts here in Bali. Sometimes I see I'm surrounded by rice fields, and I see how much work it is to get rice, and it's cheap and not so nutritional, and they pour so much pesticide, and they cut down like all the bananas and the papayas. Papayas that just grow from the jungle and the passion fruits.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. You know, one time I did a rough estimate, and because, you know, when I started doing agroforestry, I was like, okay, so how things could really look like if everybody will eat this diet and could understand how agroforestry works. And so I calculated, you know, because there's a lot of talk about, oh, you know, we're too many in this planet and yada, 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 right? And so I calculated that Japan, I went to the most populated or one of the most populated places in the world. If we'll cut all the subsidies on rice, and I'm saying this because it mentioned rice, it will turn all the rice fields into basically, you know, agroforestry systems, and all the Japanese will become fruit-based. Fruit-based eaters. They, with the current amount of land that they have available and the current population, they will no need to. Everybody will get 3,000 calories. Basically, I calculated.
Okay. Yeah, I think that could be maybe a next episode. We can go more on agroforestry. So let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much.
We'll talk about it later.
And yeah,
that could be a can of worms, right?
See you guys.
Yeah, see you later. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Emmanuel.
Thank you, guys.
Good seeing you, Brandon.
Bye.
See you too.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.